to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
We are on time and underway this hour on Flames Talk. How we doing? Happy Tuesday. It is Tuesday, January 7th, and we're underway with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg from our Groundworks downtown studio. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcast on this Tuesday. And hello, Wes.
How are you today, pal?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Hanging in. Go ahead.
Should we start with a Flames Talk birthday shout out?
Oh, the stud muffin himself.
Aaron Vickers.
42?
I think it's his 41.
No, he's an 83. He'd be 42 today.
Might as well be 43 for all we know.
To the other member of the Flames Talk fam who's not with us on this Tuesday, yeah. Happy 42nd to Aaron Vickers.
Buddy, I would have texted you to say happy birthday, but I wouldn't be getting paid for that. So I'll just do it on the air and cross it off my to-do list.
Happy birthday, Vicks. Hope you're feeling better. I do not think I'm exaggerating with what I'm about to say, but like this next 10-game stretch for the Calgary Flames that starts Tuesday night on the road in Anaheim, this feels like it could be an absolutely crucial stretch. I don't think it's one of those stretches that can necessarily make their season, although if you win 10 in a row, I think that probably will make your season. Not anticipating that. But I do think that this upcoming...
You're so negative.
I know, I always have been. I do think this next 10-game stretch has the chance to break Calgary's season. Starting on Tuesday night, Flames play 8 of their next 10 on the road. We know how much of a struggle that's been for them this season. We know that it's been far better at home than on the road. In this 10-game stretch, they play LA twice, once there, once here. Winnipeg twice, both there. St. Louis twice, who they're fighting tooth and nail with right now, both there. And one game on the road in Minnesota. If this stretch goes well, I think it tells us a lot about this group, and I think it tells us a lot about what this group is going to be about going forward. However, if this goes poorly, I think it's got the chance to sink them. I think it's got the chance to put them in that situation where they probably won't be able to dig themselves back up. So I really do feel like this next 10-game stretch, and they're going to be halfway through their season when they come back from this 2-game trip to SoCal. They'll be halfway through when Wednesday's game in LA is done. This next 10-game stretch that takes them past the midway mark into the third quarter of the season feels like an absolutely massive potential pivot point this season.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, but what number would you be comfortable with in terms of, like, is 500 good enough to get through this stretch?
Yeah, I think if you could go 500, I think that you'd probably say, hey, that's a pretty good stretch, because that means they're going to win some games on the road. Mm-hmm. Like, going 500 would mean winning at least 3 games on the road, you'd think. And there's some tough road games they've got in there, some back-to-backs they've got in there. So, yeah, I think 500 would be good. Anything above 500, I think, is just gravy. I do think this is going to be a tough stretch, and I think this is going to be a metal testing stretch for them. And this is kind of that area of the season where, you know, you're kind of defining now what the stretch drive is going to look like, what that drive towards the deadline is going to look like. I think even this next 10-game stretch could be very crucial in determining Craig Conroy's decision making when it comes to the trade deadline. Like, this is a very, and they'll still have games after that. They'll have some home games after that as they move towards the Four Nations break, where they got the 2 weeks without games. But it starts with this meat grinder of an 8-10 on the road and some really difficult opposition mixed in there.
Yeah, there's no sugarcoating the fact that this team, to get to the goal that they've set out, and I'm talking the short-term goal of being a playoff team, there's no getting around the fact that they need to be a lot better on the road. And so it's not just, I suppose, about being better on the road, but as you laid out with 8 of the next 10 in their white jerseys, you kind of have to accomplish one to accomplish the other. Like if you are still sitting around the bottom of the league in either wins or points on the road right now, they have 5 wins, which I believe is the second lowest total in the NHL, and 14 points, which as of yesterday was the third lowest total in the NHL on the road. Yeah. And so if you're going to be hanging around there, you can kiss the playoffs goodbye. You can't be good enough at home to outplay a 30th or 31st type record on the road. And yet, if they can come through this stretch, and as you outlined, against some really good opponents with some victories, I think you could take a lot of momentum from it. Like, if you can get through this meat grinder of a stretch at 500, maybe you can get 4 wins on the road. I think it could go a long way for a team that, you know, isn't unaware of what sort of ailing them or threatening to hold them back.
Yeah. I don't know what to expect. I don't know if this team is going to figure it out on the road, because Winnipeg's the number 2 team in the NHL, and they've got 2 games in like a week in Winnipeg. Minnesota's a very tough team to play on the road. You know, you've got LA on the second half of a back-to-back. St. Louis is a team that you're fighting tooth and nail with, and while I know that a lot of the outside models don't love St. Louis and some of their underlying metrics, they've still been a tough out. They were a tough out for the Flames earlier this year. So this is going to be one of those really interesting stretches to see how the Flames deal with a lot of this stuff, because there's a lot of games in a short period of time. There's a lot of travel. Like, yeah, this could really be one of those season-breaking things. Again, I don't know if I see it making their season, but I do think there's the possibility that this could really sewer their season if they don't handle it correctly.
It becomes an interesting litmus test for not for their style of play, because I don't think we're talking about the jury being out on how this team needs to play to have success, but if this is going to make any sense, it's sort of a litmus test for whether they can do that over and over again in a short stretch. Like, I see this Flames team with this double reload system that they want to play. Like, this is an exhausting brand of hockey. When this team does what they're being asked to do, and there's been great buy-in, when they sort of hit those marks, it's a really grueling brand of hockey. I do think for that reason, it's going to be a challenge for the Calgary Flames to win games on the second half of back-to-backs. And don't get me wrong, that there's, you know, it's not easy to play any sort of system in the NHL. There's a lot of effort that is being expended, and yet I do think, and I've had quiet conversations with lots of people on both this team and other teams about this, like, this is a really taxing brand of hockey, and to do it over and over again on the road, I'm curious to see how it goes. And that's not me, I hope I'm not misrepresenting myself, that's not me saying they should try and play a different style. They've honed in pretty well on what they need to do to be successful, but it's a tough way to play, and that's going to make those back-to-backs especially difficult. Now, I think when you execute it properly, you can gain some energy and momentum from that. But I don't think it's a total coincidence that we've seen this team really struggle on the second night.
Fair. And, you know, it's funny that that leads us to the other, I think, big topic in this conversation. As Mick writes in, 960-960, by the way, the text line is wide open for you if you're listening live on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Mick says, I'd really like to know what the Flames accomplish by making the playoffs and why it should have any effect on Conroy's decisions. Isn't it about winning cups? I think, Mick, what I think this next stretch leading into the Four Nations face-off, and not just this 10-game stretch, what I think the decision-making might change for him is, you know, what he does with some of his veterans and what he's open to. If they're still in a playoff mix, I don't know if he's going to be taking a ton of calls on Blake Coleman or taking a ton of calls on Nazem Kadri, just two names that would fit into the conversation. Whereas, if this 10-game stretch or this 15-game stretch or whatever it is before they hit the break doesn't go well and they come out of the Four Nations break and they're 7 points out of a playoff spot, well, I think maybe he's a little bit more open if somebody's offering a boatload for the, like, hey, we think Blake Coleman is a perfect fit in our middle six as a versatile left-right winger that can put us over the top and really nail down a checking line. We're willing to offer this, this, and this, and now you're listening. And I think that those conversations, and I know this might frustrate a guy like Mick, because I can just see Mick's, the steam coming out of Mick's ears because he wants these trades made anyway, but the realistic nature of this conversation is that I don't think that Conroy is going to be super eager to be moving veterans because he feels they're a big part of this building process, but maybe a little bit more willing to listen if they are a little more out of this playoff conversation going into kind of the final stretch of the season.
I think, and this is me, I suppose, taking what's not a wild guess, but you know, I'll preface this by saying I have not had this conversation with Craig Conroy, so I don't know exactly, you know, how he might approach it. And yet what I will say is I think the former player in Craig Conroy puts a lot of stock in not sending the wrong message to a locker room. And that's not to say that he's not willing to make the difficult decisions, because he certainly has shown so far that he is and you know, quite willing to make those decisions. I just think if a team is a couple points out of a wild card spot or sitting in a wild card spot, a former player like Craig Conroy is really wary about sending four guys out of town and sending a message to the rest of the group that either I don't think you can make it or I don't care if you make it. I believe that Craig Conroy will put a lot of stock in, hey, if we've gotten this far, I want to see it through. And I'm not talking about adding, you know, Frank Saravalli is going to come on in the next hour and talk about his trade targets list. And I don't think Craig Conroy has names circled on that list. Oh, I could use me a rental this season. That's not what's happening at the Saddle Dome, but I do believe that he's also not going to raise the flag if his team's right in the mix.
I think that's probably a fair way of putting it.
And I get where Mick's coming from, but I also think the sort of value of if this Flames team managed to squeeze into the playoffs, you don't think there's value in Dustin Wolf being a game one playoff starter in his rookie season? You don't think there's a value in Matt Coronato and Connor Zeri and Kevin Ball and other young guys who are going to be a big part of this thing moving forward? You don't think there's a value in them getting some playoff experience? I get it. And, you know, I think if we're quiet, we can maybe hear Mick yelling at his radio. I get where people are coming from, but if you get that close, there's a lot of value on the other side of it too. It's not about, hey, let's go chase another cup for Nazem Kadri and, you know, make sure at 30 something he gets another. That's not what's motivating the Flames, but there are some things that can help push your franchise forward.
Well, and on the other hand, like if you are a little further out than they are right now, as you move towards the trade deadline, I think that all of a sudden the conversation internally about that pick and the top 10 nature of this year's pick, I think that becomes a little bit more relevant. Like if they're on the bubble come the trade deadline, maybe not. But if they're a little further back and now they I think, again, it opens up the conversation of maybe they're a little bit more willing to trade away players for things that don't help them right now and open the door for some more young players. So I guess what I would say to Mick, who I know is very frustrated about them being in the mix and in the middle of the pack almost midway through the season, and Mick, you know me, I'm not even being critical, and there are many, like a few texts coming in from Tank Nation. This says, thanks, Mick. Signed Tank Nation. Like I get where some people are, and I'm not even throwing that out or dismissing that out of hand at all, because I know there are a lot of people that feel this way. I guess what I would say is there's still a lot of hockey to be played here. There's still a lot to be determined. And this group has, I think, done a very nice job of exceeding expectations and playing at a higher level than perhaps many thought they were going to. But there's still a lot of hockey to be played, and there's still more steps and ramp ups that this season is going to have in terms of the intensity and a lot more hurdles and tests the Flames are going to face. So I still don't know where they're going to be as we move towards the final quarter of the season. I still think that and this 10 game stretch that we're talking about could go a long way in helping to determine it.
I've had, as you know, because we talk a lot of Flames hockey, both on the air and off the air. I've had multiple times this year where I thought the parachute was maybe starting to come out a little bit. I've had multiple occasions where I wondered if we were, you know, going to start to see the Flames slip, whether it was because they looked tired, whether it was because they'd had a couple of gut punch losses in a row, whatever the case. I can't say that I haven't wondered, and yet they've sort of managed to hang around, and this becomes the next test, and not just the totality of 8 road games in 10, but how do you look against the Winnipeg Jets? How do you look against the Los Angeles Kings? Where do you realistically think that you stack up? And I'm not saying you're gonna beat the Jets and go, yeah, that's it, we're a cup contender, but what can you glean from your team in those games?
You know, just a conversation about this next 10 game stretch has made some people want to text. This says, regarding your answer to Mick, if Conroy isn't listening to everything, he is not doing his job. What should occur if they're competing for a playoff spot is the asset cost to acquire the Flames vets is higher and more firm. And that might be true, although I do think there would be a whole lot more reticence in trading away some of your veteran guys if they're still fighting in that playoff mix. And maybe that's exactly what it is. The asking price is significantly higher or significantly firmer if that's where they are come the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're talking about veteran pieces that are under contract. Like you use Blake Coleman as an example, and I think he's a great example because any contender, based on what we've...
Well, look what Tampa paid to get him in 2020, right?
But even at 2019. Even at his age and contract, like that's the sort of guy a contender should want, right? But you have him signed. And so I always think back to 2014-15 when the Flames were surprising everybody. Was that the year they sent Curtis Glencross out the door at the deadline, right? And that was one that you kind of went, oh.
They traded him to Washington.
Yeah.
They also traded Berchi that year.
They traded Sven Berchi that year to Vancouver. And so that was a team that you kind of thought, oh.
And claimed the Schlemcat
off
of waivers.
And you kind of thought to yourself, geez, I didn't see Glencross, who wore a letter and had a significant role. I didn't see them trading him away. They're sitting there in a spot. But he did
request a trade, right? That was a requested trade, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember that part, but you're probably right. But that was an expiring contract.
Yeah.
And so I suppose what I am trying to get to is it's easier to sell your team on we traded an expiring contract because of what it means in the future. Then we traded Blake Coleman, who you guys love and we have signed for a few more years. If you're a couple more years, if you're out of the playoff race, you get it.
Yeah.
But if you're right in there, I just think the former player and Craig Conroy is sort of cognizant of the message that's sending.
This from Spencer. I don't really see a world where they get through this next gauntlet and aren't further out of a playoff spot, so I think folks can definitely relax. If they do, then great, but they're currently only 4 points out of a top 10 pick right now. This from Darren in Legacy. If the Flames make the playoffs, it's going to be a lot easier to sign these young players when their contract time comes up because they want to be there because they're on a winning team. Save the trades for the draft, and it's a win-win. That comes from Darren in Legacy. This says, I will reiterate that a winning culture is greater than any draft pick. Look at Buffalo. Look how long it took Edmonton. And that's only because they got two of maybe the best four hockey players on the planet. That comes from Brandon in Mahogany. This says there's absolutely no value to the playoffs if you get destroyed. Close, good grief. The only thing they'll learn is just how bleeping far away they are. That's from... the Tank Nation texter. From Ken. Oh, go ahead. Do you want to respond to that one?
Well, I couldn't agree less, actually. And you're not looking...
You don't usually hear that one very often. I couldn't agree less. You don't hear that one very often. I like that.
You're not looking to get into the playoffs to get your wheels blown off, but I actually don't think that the playoffs would end and you'd consider it at this stage of your franchise to be a total waste. I really don't.
Yep. What you're trying to say is that any contender has all the big pieces and could use a solid third liner like Coleman and would pay for it. That comes from Dylan. That's exactly what we're talking about. This from Ken, who says, all this talk of playoffs is just dust in the wind. The Flames need a stud number one center from the draft. Call it Team Tank or whatever you want to call it. Cheer for the team, but don't pretend there's any other priority. That comes from Ken. This says, see, that team in 14-15 making the playoffs set them back 2 to 3 years was a product of high drafts and a steal in Johnny, and even that team sold. This team is a product of hard work. They have no star talent and none in the system. That on the text line as well.
Let's dig in on this one, I think, for a second, because where 2014-15 set this franchise back is how management
reacted to it afterwards. Agreed. Yeah.
This was 2014-15, the Findaway Flames, as Will Z likes to call them.
Trademark Peter Labardius.
Good point. That team exceeded expectations, and what the reaction from management at the time was, they were fooled into thinking they were a little better than they were.
Yeah.
And that's not a shot at Brad Treliving. Craig Conroy was on that management staff as well. Lots of smart people got caught chasing something that they weren't quite ready to chase. And
there was a lot of debate
yeah.
about that. There was a lot of debate about whether they should chase that season and are they ready to compete or should they stick with the process that they had started in Brad Treliving's first year?
Because they then at the draft traded multiple picks for Dougie Hamilton.
Yep.
The next year they would have traded multiple picks for Travis Hamonic.
No,
back-to-back years?
No,
two years
apart. In between was second-round pick for Brian Elliott.
Correct. So they started using their draft capital way too soon to chase missing pieces when
Curtis Lazar was in there for a second-round pick.
Quite frankly, way too many missing pieces at that point. Yep. And so if this Flames team, and this is where you can keep the receipts on Pat and I, if this Flames team makes the playoffs this year, you're going to hear me, and I know you're going to hear Pat, sitting here in April and May and June saying they can't veer away from what the long-term plan was. They can't let a surprise playoff berth this year change the bigger picture. That was the problem. That's where they got set back several years, and that's where that text I completely agree with. Yes, 14-15 did set them back a couple years, but didn't set them back because they made the playoffs. It set them back, at least from my vantage point, because of how they reacted to it.
This reads, does Team Tank realize that professional sports players don't play to lose? Look a few hours up the QE2 to see what losing a pick can or can't do. What else we got here at 960? Lots of texts, which I was not expecting. Jerry in BC says, so I have confidence in Craig Conroy and the process. If they do make the playoffs, it'll be good experience for the young players. I don't like the mushy middle idea, though. This from Big G. It'll be a real struggle if the Flames continue to only score 2 goals or so per game. The trades become valuable. Making sure I get to the ones that we haven't read as of yet. Stefan in Calgary says, I'm tired of all the people wanting to tank for maybe a high draft pick. Who's so good that they have to tank? Plus, look at all the teams that try to tank, a.k.a. Edmonton took them 10 first-round picks to get McDavid. No player wants to play for the next draft pick. This from John. If Coleman's worth a boatload, what is Anderson worth with $2 million retained? And this says it's the same every year, no matter what. Right in the middle of the pack and miss the playoffs, it's brutal. Even if they make it, it's 4 and out. There you go on the text line at 960-960. And it does, there's a lot of, there's a lot of, I think, debate about the value of staying in it and the value of falling out of it. And I don't think that that debate is going to end anytime soon because there's still a lot to be determined.
Yeah.
The Flames have shown that they are a competitive group, but I also think there are signs that, hey, the Flames might have difficulty remaining as competitive as they've been. Sure. And I'm not suggesting they will, but I think there at the very least you could say there are signs that could suggest that maybe it does become a little bit more difficult, which is why, to bring it all full circle to the way we started this segment off and this hour off, which is why this next 10 to 15 game stretch leading into the Four Nations faceoff and this next 10 games specifically is going to be so telling, because this is when I think things get really difficult. I think this is the most difficult stretch of their season as of yet. If they respond positively to it, I think it tells us a lot more about what this group is going to be made of from or until the end of the season.
Yeah, and that's really what management is asking of the players. Like, you're not asking them to worry about the big picture and the draft lottery and all that. So, you know, let them go out and see what it looks like after this 10-game stretch. Let's see if in the sort of latest of several stretches that you could say, hey, well, this could be the time that the Calgary Flames start to tumble. You know, this could be when they've finally kind of met their match in terms of a grueling stretch or in terms of caliber of opponent. Okay, it absolutely might be. Now let's see how it looks in 10 games.
Yep. It's Steinberg and Wes along with you this hour on Flames Talk, as we're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for all your texts for all of your texts, for those who are listening live with us at 960-960. Text lines always open for you on Flames Talk. Hey, do you need a smart and convenient way to clean your clothes and sports equipment? Well, the boys and girls over at Bel Air Cleaners, and specifically our good friend Alif over at Bel Air Cleaners, well, they're not just a dry cleaner. This is a community-minded business offering innovative, trusted services that make life easier and healthier. So Bel Air Cleaners offers a wide range of unique and innovative services tailored to make life easier, like pickup, sanitization with SaniSport, and delivery service for sports equipment, dry cleaning of specialty items done right, such as comforters, shoes, hats, and wedding attire, and laundry done at the click of a button, including pickup, wash, dry, neatly fold, and delivery. Let me tell you about what Bel Air did for me just before I went to the draft in Vegas last summer. Alif said, hey, I know you're going. Like, come in, and we're not only are we going to dry clean the shirts, but we're going to travel pack them for you. And that's my worst. That is my absolute worst skill, is packing dress clothes to travel. Three shirts packed up, pressed perfectly, got into the hotel, hung up those shirts, no wrinkles, they were ready to go. And that's just one of the services offered over at Bel Air. And they're always giving back to the community through partnerships with local charities. Kidsport Calgary, for every equipment cleaning service, $15 goes back to the charity. Parachutes for Pets, they accept donations of good condition animal supplies, clean the items at no cost, and ensure they're passed on to pets and families in need. And Day One Dad, their mission is to support dads, moms, and caregivers by offering resources that empower families to thrive. As well, 5% of your total will go back to the Day One Dad program. So not only is Bel Air making your life easier, they're also making Calgary and Southern Alberta a better place to live. Visit belair.ca, call 403-201-4911, or drop by to experience their services firsthand.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time now for a Tuesday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Tuesday roundtable. Gents, as the Flames get set to kick off a SoCal back-to-back, Anaheim and Los Angeles on Tuesday, Wednesday, respectively, Andre Kuzmenko will stay in the lineup to open the first half of that back-to-back Tuesday in Anaheim. And that comes after what I think is fair to say, boys, a mixed bag on Saturday for Andre Kuzmenko against the Nashville Predators. Mixed bag of a game. How do we feel about the decision to keep Kuzmenko in the lineup for this one against the Ducks?
Yeah, it was definitely a mixed bag, Pat. I mean, I thought outside of the two terrible penalties that he took, both in the offensive zone and one with his team on the power play, that he was way more impactful than he's been certainly since, maybe two or three games earlier in the season. I really liked his newfound mentality to try to get pucks to the net, because that has been, the biggest sticking point for coaches this season, is they've tried to encourage him to use his shot more. I mean, he's got probably the best shot on the team. He just hasn't used it enough. So to see him have one shot but eight shot attempts in that game against the Predators was certainly a really positive step in the right direction for me. He just looked like a dangerous guy again, instead of just a guy who was out there turning pucks over, allowing plays to die on his stick, and probably not working hard enough, quite frankly. So to see him work hard, to see him get some shot attempts and look more dangerous, I thought was a really positive step in the right direction. But those two penalties are two penalties he simply cannot take. And, you know, to your point, and you talked about it on the postgame show, Pat, were the penalties as bad as a lazy stick penalty because he wasn't moving his feet? I guess not. But again, both in the offensive zone, one with his team on the power play. The first one was completely unnecessary, just chopped a player's stick in half. And the second one was obviously a brain cramp, where he broke his stick and held onto it for what seemed like half an hour before the referees were finally forced to call a penalty. So if you can eliminate the bad penalties and play the same way he did on Saturday tonight, I like his chances. Remember, the last time the Flames played the Ducks, Andre Kuzmenko had a hat trick in that hockey game.
That must have been a while ago.
No, it was April 12th.
It was.
I'll just kind of piggyback on the way Willsey put it, which is it was a pretty good hockey game if you could take out the two penalties. And what I like about Ryan Huska leaving Andre Kuzmenko in his lineup tonight in Anaheim is that's basically what he's asking him. Like, go play that same hockey game without those two boneheaded, careless, unnecessarily, and ultimately costly penalties. And I think it would have been really easy. And quite frankly, guys, if I was the one making the decision, I would have really gone back and forth about whether a guy who in part costs you a game by not knowing a rule you expect him to know should be in the lineup next game. I don't think we would have been sitting here today on the roundtable ripping Ryan Huska for taking Andre Kuzmenko out of the lineup if that had ultimately been the decision. But I really do think it's important that he's leaving him in tonight in Anaheim. I think it's an important, I don't know if it's a show of confidence or just an opportunity to show more of what he did show in the first period. He had that great shift I've referenced several times where he made three awesome passes from below the goal line. He did, as Wilsey pointed out, try to funnel more pucks to the net. You know, he did pass up one golden shooting opportunity, but for the most part, he was sort of heeding the message that they need him to have more shot attempts. And with Ryan Huska choosing to, I guess, focus on those positives from Saturday and say, I'm going to give you another shot, I think it's a savvy bit of coaching. Now, the onus is on Andre Kuzmenko, because if tonight's not another good one, I'm sure he's back out tomorrow.
Well, and then the other thing is that decent chance somebody comes out of the lineup at forward to get Dewar in, because it's the mom's trip. They try to cycle everybody through, so wouldn't be a massive surprise if we also saw Barry and Miramanov at some point get back in. We'll see, but they do kind of like to try to make that happen when they do the mom's or dad's trips, and they are on the mom's trip right now. But on the Kuzmenko front, I think this is, I came away from Saturday as much thinking about the positive of Kuzmenko than thinking about the two penalties. And honestly, if you were to say more positive or more negative for Kuzmenko's game against Nashville, I would have gone positive, like 55-45. Those penalties, no disagreement that you can't take them, no disagreement that they were frustrating, no disagreement that they hurt the team. But also hurting this team is their poor penalty kill. Also hurting this team is their inability to kill off penalties or seeming inability to kill off penalties at key times, which bit them in a big way in the second period on Saturday. So, like, to firmly place goat horns only on Kuzmenko from Saturday, I think is unfair. And I think that what we saw from him with those eight shot attempts, what we saw from him with a much more engaged brand of hockey, like, this is coming from one of the more critical guys of Kuzmenko's season. I've been very critical of him. But when I see a night where I'm like, okay, that's a little bit more how the guy can impact things positively, I'm also going to give him credit. And he doesn't very often take penalties like that. Like, this is not a guy who has a tendency of taking bad ozone penalties or for being over aggressive. So if it happens on one night, I'm not going to crucify the guy, and I'm not going to say that he shouldn't get back in. I saw a lot of good things. They need those things regularly from Kuzmenko. But Wilsey, the one thing that I think I would close that, so I think it is the right move to put him back in. And I think that there were things to build on from Saturday night. But Wes is bang on. If you don't see those things again in this game against Anaheim, then what are we doing here? Like, there's a blueprint that's laid out. There's a very clear message that you know the coaching staff is delivering to him. If he does not then go deliver in his own right, then I think we're right back to the pulling our hair out and the frustration part of it with this player again.
I agree. And I like the decision to put him back in, give him another game, and see what he does with it. As far as trying to cycle the guys in who have been out, the Flames are 2 points out of a playoff spot. And while I think it would be nice for the players and for their moms to see them play against the Kings tomorrow night, I think you've got to put your best lineup on the ice. And maybe that means changes. Maybe it doesn't if they get a win against the Ducks tonight. As far as Andre Kuzmenko, the door is open for him to prove that he belongs in the lineup, because the Flames, quite frankly, aren't getting enough from their fourth line right now. And I know we're going to talk about Walker Dewar in a minute, but they need to start to get something from their fourth line. It doesn't have to be goals and points, because that's really not their job. If you get some goals and points, it's a bonus. But they need that fourth line to kind of get back to the way they were playing earlier in the season. But the Flames are also a team that needs to start to score more. All of a sudden, they are 29th in the NHL in goals for per game, 2.62. And Andre Kuzmenko is a guy who, when he's right, can help you put the puck in the net. So I think that's another reason why he's getting an opportunity to get another game and prove to the coaches that he has heard them and that he has made some changes as far as his mindset is concerned. He's not looking for the perfect shot or the perfect play every single time he's got the puck on his stick. He's just being a little bit more simple, and I think he was on Saturday, so I'm anxious to see what he can do against the Ducks tonight.
And we're talking about a guy who you can see the frustration has grown throughout the season. You know, I remember watching him do an extended skate sort of by himself a few weeks ago at the Saddle Dome and then splinter his stick over the crossbar before he left the ice. Like, this season has not been a fairy tale for Andre Kuzmenko. Mm-hmm. And I think some faith today from the coaching staff, a little bit of a show of, hey, you know, we think you can turn this around. I think it could potentially go a long ways.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. And let's talk a little bit about Walker Dewar, who will be a healthy scratch again as Kuzmenko remains in the lineup. And Willsy, I'm with you. The fourth line hasn't been as effective over the last number of weeks here. And for a while there, it was a real calling card for this group. You know, you're going to get some quality work from that number four line. I thought Walker came into the lineup when he first got recalled and really made an impact, and I thought looked a whole lot more like the Walker Dewar from two seasons ago. Of late, though, that effectiveness feels like it's dropped off. If that doesn't return, like if he doesn't return to being a little bit more effective in his role, how far away are we from considering a swap in the American League? How far away are we considering bringing somebody else up and giving them an opportunity in a similar role?
I think we're close. I mean, I agree with you, Pat. I really liked Walker Dewar's game when he first got recalled, but he's kind of reverted back to the player who we saw last season now. And that's why he's opened the door for Andre Kuzmenko to come back in the lineup. And, you know, he's not a guy who you need to get a lot of goals and points from, but if he chipped in a little bit offensively, I think that'd be a good thing, obviously. He's goalless with one assist in 12 games with the Flames this season. He's pointless in 8 games, so you'd like to get a little bit from him offensively because I do think that he has that potential. But for me, it's more about just playing an effective fourth-line role and using his size and using his speed and getting in there and banging and crashing on the forecheck. And, you know, for me, this would apply to all three guys on the fourth line prior to Andre Kuzmenko coming in because he's a different player. He's not really a prototypical fourth liner. But, you know, talking about Ryan Lomberg on the left side of that line and Kevin Rooney playing center on that line, you want that line to set the table for your other three lines to do some damage. Get in the offensive zone, hem the other team in, make them kind of play on their heels. And if you don't do something offensively, I think you're putting the next line that comes on the ice in a position to do that. So that's what I'd like to see from Walker Dewar if he gets back in the lineup. But maybe he won't. Maybe Andre Kuzmenko has a good game and stays in. Or maybe when the Flames get back to Calgary, they decide to get somebody else a look. And you know, if they're just looking to fill a fourth line wing spot, I think you've got some pretty good options with the Calgary Wranglers. I probably wouldn't bring up Rory Karens. I'd leave him in the AHL and to just keep doing what he's doing, and that's tearing up that league. He's got 21 goals and 34 points in 34 games and is playing some great hockey. It would be good to see him get rewarded at some point in time, but I'm not sure now is that time. Dryden Hunt is a guy who I think you know what you're going to get from him at the NHL level. He's been really productive at the AHL level, but if you bring him up, maybe you play him on the left, maybe you play him on the right. Lomberg can play either side. But I think you know what you're going to get from Dryden Hunt in a fourth-line role. So he's a guy who you could call up. Adam Klapka has spent some time with the big club this year. I think he can play in that fourth-line right-wing spot. So, yeah, I'm guessing he's probably on pretty thin ice right now.
Where I'm wondering, guys, and just to, I suppose, agree to start, I certainly think we could see a flip. I wouldn't be shocked at any point to see that Walker Dewar was on the waiver wire with the Flames looking to get him to the Wranglers and bring somebody else up instead. Where I'm sort of focusing, especially the way things have been going, is whether there's a forward on the Wranglers that can help with the penalty kill. And one of the things that we saw when Walker Dewar was up at first was an opportunity to help on that shorthanded staff. We haven't seen it very much of late. He's got a minute and a half of shorthanded ice in the past six games, and the reason I searched those past six specifically is because we know that the Flames have surrendered at least a power play goal in each of those. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not going to sit here and profess to know exactly who's on each of the Wranglers' shorthanded units, but if the Flames do decide to make a switch, I wonder if they're looking almost exclusively at who can help us the most on the penalty kill. If they do give up another power play goal tonight, making it seven games in a row, how can they get someone in who can help to sort of stop the bleeding in that sense? I know Dryden Hunt's a guy who can kill penalties. I know Sam Honzek is a guy that they're working into killing penalties with the Wranglers. I'm sure there's candidates beyond that, but I wonder if it's not, oh, well, you know, let's promote Rory Cairns because he's scored 20-plus already. I wonder if it's exclusively how can we stop the bleeding here on the PK?
The I think, guys, we are in a situation where I think that they are and honestly should be pretty close to making the decision. And maybe you give, maybe it's as early as L.A. on Wednesday that Walker Dewar gets back in and plays a little bit better. And maybe that changes the conversation for a little bit. But if that doesn't happen, yeah, I think that we're kind of at that threshold point right now where it might be the time to have the conversation. Dryden Hunt, Adam Klapka's got a right shot. They've got so few right shots on this forward roster right now. Klapka might be a guy you'd look at. You've got other forwards that are kind of in that same type of role that you could easily plug in to a fourth line role. I know they've been really happy with the way William Stromgren's played, and so he could be an option. So there's just a lot of different things you could look at, and it's not like we're talking about one game to tie the two topics of our roundtable together. We're talking about one game where we're being able to grab positives out of Andre Kuzmenko, right? Who knows how many more he's got. So, you know, you're recalling somebody who's potentially going to play significant games. And so I think you got to be careful about it. I think you got to be smart about it. But Dryden Hunt can play both wings. We know how much this head coach loves him. So Dryden Hunt's a possibility. Adam Klapka gives you a right shot where you've got so few of those. That's a possibility. And then Clark Bishop or some of the other younger players, maybe you think about putting Rory Cairns as your number four set. I just, all these different things you could mix into the conversation when having this chat. And so I think if the Flames aren't having that chat right now, they should be pretty soon ready to have it if Dewar doesn't return to kind of where he was before.
Yeah, and I guess another option would be a long shot, I think, but Martin Furk. You know, he is a right shot. He's an experienced player. He's 31 years old, and he's played in 124 NHL games. So, you know, he's another guy who could potentially come up and play in a fourth-line role for you. But the good news is that the Flames have a bunch of options there. Yeah, it would be nice if they had more right shots in the organization, but they do have some to choose from at the AHL level. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes first for Andre Kuzmenko tonight. And, you know, hopefully he has a good game, and then he's back in against the Kings tomorrow night. If he doesn't, that probably, or at least maybe, opens the door for Walker Dewar to get back in and prove that you know, he belongs at the NHL level. And then if not, then I do wonder if we might see a change to the roster when the team gets back to Calgary after this two-game trip to Southern California. But again, I guess the good news is there have been seasons where you felt like you didn't have good options at the AHL level.
For sure.
This wouldn't be one of them. The Calgary Wranglers have had an outstanding season. They've got young guys. They've got old guys. They've got in-between guys trying to kick down the door and get a call-up. So you've got some good options there.
Good stuff, Willsey. We will do it again on the roundtable on Wednesday. Thank you, pal.
Okay, guys, enjoy the game tonight.
That is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes, our outstanding producer. And that's your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.